This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It is 6 a.m. in the morning, Monday, the 24th of May. I'm Wong Shaoning, and joining me in the studio is Philip C.
Very good morning.
Good morning. It seems like we haven't been in the studio together for quite a fair bit.
It's been a holiday. Wow, 10 days. Because we had Hari Raya break, you had the weekends, you had the last week off.
Well, I work from home. I don't know about you, but I was on air actually last week.
I heard.
Undisclosed location in Kuala Lumpur.
Yes, in the depths of Bangsa.
Thank you for outing me, Philip C.
I was on trial because I was like watching earwax videos this whole weekend.
What?
I was just watching how people extract earwax. And it's such a big distinction between American and British videos. It's incredible. I was transfixed, Shaoning.
I have, you know what? I'm almost speechless, and that hardly ever happens to me. Because why would you spend your time?
It's extremely cathartic, I feel, to see people extract your earwax out.
Okay.
And it's so interesting how the Americans and British do it. The British are very technical, and they want to break the earwax into small pieces, but the Americans love it when they be able to extract out the huge monster.
Listeners, if you are fascinated by this, or if you are like Philip C., a earwax fan, you really have to tweet in or WhatsApp us, you know, at 018-789-8899, because I cannot believe that this is something that people really watch.
Dr. Pimple Popper.
Okay, that I've seen before, and I have to say it's a bit fascinating, but earwax is a whole different ball game. Although I remember my one of our producers telling me there's whales have earwax.
I'm sure all of us have earwax.
Okay.
But of course, different types.
Different textures. So
different
while
types.
You were watching earwax being extracted, I did something a little bit more intellectual. I binged on Netflix.
Oh, what did you watch?
I watched this Mexican drama called Who Killed Sarah? And apparently it's like the number one show. And I watched it for like, I think there's two seasons, but I have to say I gave up after episode 4 or 5. Because I was like, are we ever going to find out who killed this girl?
And who is Sarah?
But
in the same vein, I also was watching Netflix, Borgen.
Oh.
The Danish political thriller.
Yes, I watched up to
really
episode
good.
5, right? And you know what's probably really scary? It probably reflects real political life more than you ever imagined,
I think so.
Right?
I was looking at this like, wow, this is
It's a very old
reality.
Series. It's, I think, 7-8 years old.
Correct.
And it's the interplay between like the journalists together with the press sects and the different ministers and in the era of coalition politics.
Correct.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It is. It's really, I feel, art imitating life. The reverse.
But let us know how you spent your weekend. You can tweet in, you can tweet in. Our handle is BFM Radio, and you can WhatsApp in 018-789-8899. But when we come back, Philip, what will we do?
We'll be talking about ransomware.
Ransomware. Yeah, guess what? A lot of people have been paying it even though they don't want to.
It is a pretty contentious issue.
Yeah, and then I'll be talking about how businesses are giving out freebies to get everyone vaccinated. As always, like I said, WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few minutes. But first, here's I Melt With You by Modern English. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was I Melt With You by Modern English. It's 6:07 in the morning, and you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning with Philip C. Now, first off, during this part of the morning, we always talk about articles which catch our eye, and these two articles are courtesy of my colleague.
What's the implication? They're not intellectually stimulating.
No, but they're very current and interesting.
It's
a reflection of what goes on in your mind, Philip.
You know what got in my mind? The title of this South China Morning Post: flight tickets, staycation, theme park deals.
So basically, you're just dying to go on vacation.
I'm just dying to go on holiday now.
I think so many people are dying to go on vacation now. And with the vaccination rollout, that kind of appeal becomes more real, but I think we are really, really quite far away from this, especially with the cases, I think, inching close to 7,000. And unfortunately for Malaysia, we've hit that 500,000 mark as of yesterday or 2 days ago. Death rates continue to rise. So guys, as usual, we don't want to sound like a broken record, but you really need to keep those SOPs and minimize your movement unless you absolutely need to. If you need to buy your essentials, go ahead, but otherwise work from home. But the point is, you know, I think the idea is that, okay, for us to eventually get to the possibility of travel once again, what needs to happen? I think you need to create herd immunity, and for us to get to that herd immunity, albeit there's a big debate, what is the level required for herd immunity? Mm. Is it 60% of the population, 70%, 80%? What happens with variants? All those are very scientific questions, which I think we will try to answer. And even scientists are trying to answer. But the point is, to get there in the first place, we need to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
And is there enough pressure, or do people feel that they need to be vaccinated? What motivates them? So I think for a lot of us, especially, I know I'm looking at the two of y'all in the studio. Mm. Yes, we have all signed up. Philip and I have already actually got our jabs, yep. The AstraZeneca. We were quite excited to do it. We wanted to do it. But what about for people who have hesitancy or maybe uncertain? And apparently this South China Morning Post says, or refers to, companies who are trying to get people to be vaccinated by offering them freebies, because as you know, everybody likes a free thing.
I mean, the freebie here are flight tickets, staycation, theme park deals. So with respect to this article, Jeffrey Lam is working with all the business community and Michael Kaduri's Hong Kong and Shanghai Hotels, which runs the luxurious Peninsula Hotels, is offering staycations and free tram rides. Sign me up, please. ASAP.
But you're not in Hong Kong.
No.
So you can't stay in the Peninsula. You can't take those trams, or otherwise known as ting ting chair. So you're stuck. And by the way, Jeffrey Lam is an executive council member of, in Hong Kong. So, but it's not just only in Hong Kong that's doing this. It's a global phenomenon.
It's UK. Yeah.
So when I look at the US, some of the perks you get from being vaccinated, if you show that you're vaccinated, include free Krispy Kremes, free Budweiser.
A free lottery ticket.
Free lottery ticket. You can get some Office Depot and Office Max discounts. White Castle gives you a free dessert on a stick. Uber and Lyft are even giving assistance to get people to the vaccination centres. So I think these are quite interesting initiatives by corporates. And it's not a bad thing. I mean, on one hand, let's face it, it's like a form of CSR, isn't it? Mm. And it gives them a bit of public relations that is not a bad thing.
Not a bad thing. The challenge is, it depends on whether there's vaccine availability first. And that's why countries like the US, even Hong Kong,
they have vaccines.
And where you've already hit a certain percentage, with the case of Hong Kong, you're about 70% vaccinated for first round, you're able to do this. Maybe Malaysia is a bit too early to do it now, but we suspect in 2 months' time, when vaccines start rolling through, and you're already getting a sense of hesitancy, how do you start putting in place the sticks and the carrots to make this work?
But does it work though? I mean, are you going to be vaccinated because somebody just gave you a donut or a burger or a dessert on a stick?
Yeah, I think it won't for me personally. In all the conversations I have with people who are hesitant, I find that, you know, putting a carrot doesn't work. It really is a lot about peer pressure. Like, I've got vaccinated, you've not. You need to come to office to do that. You need to get vaccinated. Mm. It feels a bit more like the conditions for you to do the following things to get back to normalcy. Mm. That's what you do. But a free donut won't rock my boat.
Yeah. I think the other thing I've noticed is, because the AZ phase one worked pretty well, and most people have very positive stories. I had a positive story. You had a positive story. There were some hiccups at the World Trade Center for sure. But I think those hiccups have been overcome. Everybody seems to have manages to get in and get out of there within an hour and a bit. So it seems, and, you know, most of us, I had a bit of a side effect. You had a bit side effect. You're out for a day. But otherwise, hey, done and dusted. And now looking forward to the jab number two, right?
Correct. I think this is where you have the conversation about transparency and trust. There's so much distrust over the vaccine. So the question is, how do you build trust? It's through your loved ones. It's also through how you communicate the challenges and the things that go right and don't go right as well.
Yeah.
That's how you build trust, in my view. Not hide things or say it's all amazing and it's all 100%. You'll be like brand new and all that. No, I think that's not the way to go.
I agree. I think we need to be honest that for some of us, I had a temperature. I didn't feel the best. I had some lethargy.
Absolutely.
It was like recovering from the cold. And the worst thing, I couldn't do my 8-kilometer run over the weekend. I felt exhausted, but it was all right. After a day or two,
you're back to normal.
I'm back to normal. Now I feel much better. I feel, in a way, more optimistic about my future that I participated in this vaccination drive. And I'm on the way of helping Malaysia achieve that herd immunity.
Yes.
And these positive stories, I think, encourage more and more people to sign up. So for those who are above 60, the vaccination AZ vaccination drive is still ongoing. There's still lots of places. So do sign up. And on the 26th, I do believe it.
They will open up to
all Malaysians from certain states. So if you're thinking about it, don't think about it. Go and speak to a friend who has done it. Maybe you can get some comfort, some advice, some personal first-hand experience and make that decision for yourself.
Actually, what I know is you can help the elderly. So like we were helping over the weekend, church communities, the old people. So even Sri Lanka, there's a small army that's helping the older segment get registered. So also reach out to those who are old and offer help to register them.
Or even if you're not old for those on the 26th, but perhaps a little bit IT not so savvy. I think that's one way we Malaysians can help out. Let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or, of course, you can tweet in at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll have some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was just dropped in by Sharon Jones and the Dab Kings.
Yeah, like all the vaccines that are dropping in now in June and July.
Yeah, hopefully more and more to come. Yes, we're on our way. Anyway, it's just gone past 6:19 in the morning, Monday 24th of May. And we're talking about this event, or is it, shall I call it event?
I wouldn't say an event. You mean ransomware?
Yeah, crime. Crime is
hostage taking. That's my view.
The new version of it without any real people being involved, right? I mean, nobody's being kidnapped
but lives are at stake, you know. And this is the philosophical debate happening and raging now is, should you pay hacker ransoms and should you make them illegal?
Okay, so let's put some context into this story. This is a BBC article. It's entitled, Ransomware, Should Paying Hackers Ransoms Be Illegal? And this is on the back of the recent news that Colonial Pipeline, which is a major energy company in the US, got hacked. So cybersecurity, a threat happened to them. And they were basically told, if you don't pay up, your pipelines aren't going to work. There will be consequences. And guess what? The CEO paid and admitted that he paid $4.5 million to get these hackers off their back.
Yep.
And now there are all these ethical questions as to whether companies should do so. And bear this in mind, apparently it's not a crime to pay the ransom.
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. And here it is the point that, unlike, as you said, previous discussions of hostage taking, you always equate it to life. But in the case of ransomware, of course, people don't see the immediate impact. But naturally, it does flow through. And so the debate here is, as you said, $4.5 million they paid to this hacker group from Russia called the Dark Side. The Dark Side is very complex. It's got a whole series of affiliates that actually manage this. But the challenge you have is, should you continue to pay these ransoms, because you just add fuel. And because hacking is a profit-oriented kind of activity, then if you allow this, make it illegal, then you stop and you provide giving the fuel to all these activities. So I think that's the logic to why you should make it illegal. But it's more complex than that.
Yeah, I mean, if we take a step back and we look at the situations where ransoms are paid. For example, I do know US will say that they never negotiate with terrorists, right, when there's any kidnapping of their citizens, because they don't want to encourage it. Otherwise, they're always going to be held literally ransomed to events like this. But cybercrime, you know, is something, I think, slightly different in the sense that there's no human lives at stake. So whether companies just take the approach like, you know, just pay them so that they go away, because if there's any disruption to my business, the cost might be even more than the ransom I pay, because let's face it, companies are driven very much by bottom line, right? And at the same time also, sometimes I think they don't want anyone to know that there's been a cyber attack on their so-called sophisticated software.
There is a reputational damage. The challenge you have is that it's the larger corporates with liquidity that can, you know, hold their ground and say, no, we won't pay.
Mm.
And that's easy for the larger businesses. The challenge you have is that if you dry up that site, what happens is the hackers will move to the smaller companies. The smaller companies, the NGOs, the social services, and they will be forced to pay because they don't have the capital or cash to basically operate under such a prolonged disruption. And that's when you could potentially impact lives.
Yeah.
Because if hospitals, services get disrupted.
Which happened in the US. I mean, if I'm not wrong, the Miami police, they had a cybercrime. And one of the hospitals in San Francisco also cybercrime. These events came to light. But, you know, it's down to that question, right? If I don't pay, what happens? What are the consequences? Is it going to be worse off for me? Am I going to face insolvency? You know, the reputational damage from, let's say, any system breakdown as a result of not paying that ransom could That's be greater. Right. So it's a little bit, I think it's a little harder to persuade companies to say don't pay at all unless you enforce a law that says it is a crime to do so.
Correct. And what I think you have to do is, if you put that law in place, then the government must think about protection. How are you going to afford and provide necessary infrastructure to protect that from happening? Because the challenge is, you can see insurers all around the world are increasing premiums as well to how you provide for subs and ransomware. For example, EXA now prohibits any payments as a result of ransomware.
Didn't they have an event recently?
They did.
They did, right? There they was did. Some attack on their Asian operations, if I'm not wrong. It was Malaysia, Thailand, Philippines, Indonesia, four countries in this region. It's increasingly common, isn't it?
Increasingly common. And people
Air India had one over the weekend also.
And early on, the airline industry, CETA, the whole auto system also got penetrated. So this is really a big challenge and everyone is facing it. And ransomware activity has gone up by 150% over last year. And I think COVID probably has accelerated this whole event, because as people work from home as well, you are relying a lot on technology to move things forward.
Yeah. Let's face it, I don't know, you know, it's whether it's fair to say, if you were in the office, would this happen less? Because, you know, you're doing less things remotely. Mm. Does the act of working remotely make it more a probability? I don't know. I'm not an IT specialist. But I do think that every company needs to clearly pay more attention to cybersecurity or the threat of it, right? Even Bank Negara, for example.
That's right.
On average, I think it's been reported that central banks spend at least almost up to 20% of all their IT capex on securing their systems against the threat of cyber criminals. And I think this figure will increase over time, because let's face it, these criminals are extremely clever. They know how to exploit a system, what the loopholes are. Give them some time and they figure it out. And the challenge is, how do we then keep one step ahead of them and not behind them?
Yeah, and this is a question about G2G, really. How do governments help and make sure that the infrastructure is there? And so back to the colonial pilot and to the question you asked, I think it's a really relevant question. Did COVID work from home affect and increase the probability of ransomware? And there's some argument to say that it could have, you know.
Yeah. But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us. Up next, we have the news bulletin. And to take us there is Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now by The Smiths. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and with me is Philip C. And of course, this is The Morning Run. And that was Close to Me by Get Up Kids. Now, at this time of the morning, which has just gone past 6:40, we always look at all the international headlines. And I think first off, we still have to pay attention, unfortunately, to India, who has now reported more than 8,000 cases of this deadly black fungus, a normally rare infection, which has a mortality rate of 50%, with some only saved by removing an eye. Now, doctors say the surge in cases is linked with the use of steroids to treat COVID, and the BBC reports that the fungus seems to strike 12 to 18 days after recovery from COVID.
Yeah, I mean, the western states of Gujarat and Maharashtra have reported more than half of the reported cases, right? At least 15 more states have reported between 8 to 900 cases. Now, this actually, what happens is that the tissue becomes black and affects those who are diabetic in nature. And the challenge in India specifically is that it has the second highest number of diabetes per population, 77 million out of 850 million adults are diabetic, second after China. So this is a bit of a worry, because these are all the after effects of the medication applied for the vaccine. Not vaccine, but COVID treatment.
Okay. And we did have a discussion with an epidemiologist about this, Ben Cowling from the University of Hong Kong, where he explained that, yes, this is something to pay attention to, but also something not to be overly alarmed over at the moment, although unfortunately cases seem to be rising. Now, moving on to our friendly neighbour down south, themselves. Last week, they announced another round of lockdowns, more severe lockdowns, after a flare of cases from Changi Airport, right?
That's right.
And so Singapore says now they will be conducting more targeted testing and surveillance operations to curb a coronavirus outbreak. So their health minister, Ong Ye Kung, said special ops, such as testing all residents in a particular housing block, will help detect and isolate people early, including those who show few or no symptoms and would otherwise be missed.
As you're saying, Xiaoning, the government has actually been conducting special testing operations for clusters, as they've broken out at airports, shopping malls and schools, extending free checks to tens of thousands of people. Now, on Sunday, it also announced that two public housing blocks will have all residents screened after several cases were found in each of them. Now, you mentioned about the airport site. That's interesting, and you're seeing that happening also in Taiwan.
Yes.
There's a bit of the link with the aviation sector happening. And what I think I understand is happening at Singapore is they're going to break the terminals. One terminal for the lower COVID risk countries and the other one for the higher risk. I think that's how they plan to isolate and try and contain that as well.
Yeah, I think some time had been spent in Singapore trying to understand where the virus came from, right? What was the source of it?
Yeah.
And I think it's due to a family that arrived from India which had the COVID-19, and there was some assistance provided to them by staff of the Singapore airport, and they suspect that's the linkage.
Yeah.
And then subsequently, this spread literally across different kinds of staff within the airport, whether it was F&B, cleaners, immigration officers, special officers. There were even lounge staff involved who unfortunately got COVID-19. And then question marks over ventilation, eating, should that be allowed in close proximity with one another? So I think Singapore, of course, now in their, they don't call it circuit breaker, but effectively it feels like a circuit breaker for them.
It is. I think they call it circuit breaker, but it's version 2 circuit breaker from what I understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they have been very clear with their SOPs. And I think what's been really interesting is the way the health minister explains these SOPs and rationalizes it, why it's necessary, backing it with science. So I think that's something that, all countries should adopt.
So I think you're alluding to something, Xiaoning, which is whether we call the SOPs static or dynamic.
Yes.
It's really not about that. It's about how clearly you explain your rationale and putting logic to it, and also having some system to how you shift between the different levels
yes.
and roles.
So you can have like tier one being the most relaxed, to tier 5 being the most severe. Okay,
right.
I'm just giving hypothetical tiers, okay?
Yes.
And then so with each tier, there's rules in terms of what you can and cannot do, and of course they become more strict with each tier.
Mm.
But the tier should be dependent on how well your country is coping with COVID-19, i.e., are you bringing down the R0 number? Is the infection rates dropping? Are the recoveries rising? Are more and more people being vaccinated? Is the level of herd immunity increasing? Are we getting closer to that? And these are things that if you tell people that they are tangible or within sight and they know what they need to do to achieve it and understand, okay, this is why we're in tier 2. This is why we're in tier 3. Oh my, this is why we're in tier 5.
Yeah.
I don't know whether then there's perhaps better acceptance of the rules and then also better self-discipline in enforcing
those. And compliance
to
the rule. Because you hear a lot about the issue that there is increasing non-compliance, although now you're getting data that's saying, oh, it's getting better. But Hari Raya was the classic example where they said that there was a lot of non-compliance during
yes.
that period.
So I think, it's of course SOPs need to keep on being adjusted. There's no running away from it. It's, COVID-19 is a virus that we're learning a lot about. It mutates faster than we can blink somehow, So we need to be also, I think, nimble and dynamic. But I think clarity is always preferred. But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. So don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Dem Changes by Buddy Miles. It's 6:50 in the morning, Monday the 24th of May. And as usual, at this time of the morning, we're looking through the papers. Philip, why don't you go first?
So many things, Xiaoning. Well, if you go to the Malaysian Reserve, on page 2, Farmer Niaga aims to double vaccine output by August. That means 4 million by August. Currently, it's already done 1.8 million this month, but it aims to double it. I think it's a Sinovac vaccine here.
Yeah, they are doing the fill and finish process, right?
That's right.
That's good news. Let's hope they... I think they're still waiting for certain batches to be approved by the National Pharmaceutical
Correct.
Registration Agency.
Correct.
So once that's done, probably there might be a rollout very, very quickly, which is good news because we do need to achieve that herd immunity as soon as possible, isn't it?
That's right. I think there was a shipment as well over the weekend for actual bottled Sinovac vaccines from China that also came through to complement the fill and finish that Pharma Niaga is doing.
Okay. In front of me is the Star. I'm looking at page three. And it's this new SOP that came out late yesterday. And it says that now, Malaysia, you need to grab your essentials and go because there's a new 2-hour limit applicable to all retail stores as stricter measures take place. So this was announced by the Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs Minister, Dato Sri Alexander Natalingi. So this would apply to all retail premises, including shopping malls, as part of the stricter SOPs. So it says that you have a maximum of 2 hours. But my question is, how is this going to be enforced?
Yes.
Keeps tabs on this?
I think time is really the big issue raging all over Twitter now and social media as a result of lockdown. One of the big things that took place was the 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Piece, and a lot of people have been complaining whether curfews really make a difference.
Yeah, does it actually then mean that more people be
clustered,
trying to do things within that 12-hour window?
Correct.
And especially for some people, dinner time becomes then a real problem,
rushed
right?
Rushed affair, especially if you've got shift worker. And so in Europe, actually, they do curfews, but it's 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Oh, okay.
Right. So the question here is whether 8 a.m., 8 p.m. was the right time zone because it might have created unnecessary cluster. But in your point here about the 2 hour with respect in the shopping mall, I think that's not a bad idea. But as you say, the concern is how do you implement it? How do you enforce it? How do you make sure people actually comply to it?
Yeah, because, okay, we are and we should, all of us, should check in with our MySajatra app whenever we go to a place. But I don't think we check out, right? There's no way, there's no scanning on our way out. And even if we do, who watches this time?
Right, unless the security guards just randomly pick people and say, hey, you're loafing around, why don't you just check your MySajatra?
Yeah, how long have you been here? And then have a glance, right? Mm-hmm. And I have noticed security guards have been more strict, asking, have you scanned in? Have you scanned in? And this was even in a coffee shop over the weekend for me, which is great because I think business owners are also enforcing their SOPs, which is a must. But I'm just curious, how are you going to implement this? And I suppose we'll find out more in the coming days. What is the approach? What's the best approach here?
Yeah. And the question is, how do you extend this beyond just only the retail? Do you do it to parks? What is the process, right? It will be a very interesting thing. And how do you extend it across?
I think so far it's just anything to do with retail and shopping malls, right? I think as long as you're kind of out there where there is better ventilation, that's supposedly okay.
Okay.
Which is also on page 5 of the Star saying, give yourself some breathing room. So experts say good indoor ventilation can prevent the spread of coronavirus. So I think building owners, this is something you need to pay attention to. Of course, Malaysia is extremely hot. All of us are super used to air conditioning, but that may not necessarily be good in the fight against COVID-19.
Yeah, air purifiers. I'm quite interested to see Shopee, Lazada sales for air purifiers to see how much they do.
Yeah. So apparently there are recommendations in terms of ventilators, filtration, air cleaning, air distributions that buildings should have. And I think this is probably the new thing that building owners or commercial...
it's a minimum requirement.
It's going to be a minimum requirement.
Right. Globally, GlaxoSmithKline is getting ready for the next pandemic. Now, as you know, GlaxoSmithKline, they've fallen behind in the COVID-19 race, but they're actually in talks with the UK and other governments about building facilities to bring vaccine development and production onshore before the next crisis.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to live with this, right? If anything, hopefully we learn our lessons and we don't forget too easily.
That's right. I think even recently the EU is mandating to open up for more vaccine production plants in Africa because they are aware it's a global issue and very keen to see how developed countries are now beginning to see how they can assist developing countries in curtailing this current pandemic before they talk about managing the next pandemic. But I think both are necessary challenges to address immediately.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the Straits Times now, and I'm looking at page 2, and they refer to the PM speech that happened at 9 PM last night, and the main message is do your own lockdown, which is almost the same thing that our DG of Health also said. I think it's clearly the case where you need to have your own self-discipline when it comes to SOPs and really minimize your movements unless it's absolutely necessary. There was also some press briefing after the press conference by our Defence Minister and the DG of Health, by Tunku Zafrul, our Finance Minister, who then said that there were 1 million people may lose jobs under another strict MCO. So explaining why MCO 3.0 is what it is, it's that necessary balance between keeping people safe while somewhat keeping the economy going.
Yeah, and the Prime Minister in his talk yesterday said the impact could be $500 billion. I'm quite scratching my head there how big that impact is.
Yeah, we'll be discussing that later with Calvin Cheng at 7:45 in terms of the economic impact of MCO 3.0. But that's all from the local papers this morning. Coming up next is a 7 AM news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be talking about global markets with Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer from Jevons Global. But first, here's Don't Stop by Fleetwood Mac. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.